Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, September 11th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 109, the second paragraph, starting with the word three. This husband has gone much further, reading through two paragraphs ending with, yet they got well, and the comments will be on both paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Kelly F., the 12 Traditions, Carol H., and the readers of the text are John K., Terry H., and Sherry K.B. And the share ID for Monday, September 10th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,895. And for Tuesday, September 11th, is 11,899. And our newcomer greeter is Melanie C. All right, let's get going here. The OA Preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Kelly F. to read the 12 steps. Kelly.
Good morning, Mo. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Okay. This is Kelly F., recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for His knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me be of service. Pass.
Thank you, Kelly F. And I'll now ask Carol H. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, Mo. This is Carol H., recovered in Northern Colorado, the 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks.
And thank you, Carol H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 109 in the chapter Two Wives, the second paragraph starting with the word three, this husband has gone, and reading through two paragraphs ending with, yet they got well. And I'll now ask John Kay to get us started.
Thanks, Mo. My name is John Kiernan, a recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Three, this husband has gone much further than husband number two. Though once like number two, he became worse. His friends have slipped away, his home is a near wreck, and he cannot hold a position. Maybe the doctor has been called in, and the weary round of sanitarians and hospitals has begun. He admits he cannot drink like other people, but he does not see why. He clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so. He may have come to the point where he desperately wants to stop, but cannot. His case presents additional questions which we shall try to answer for you. You can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. Four, you may have a husband of whom you completely despair. He has been placed in one institution after another. He is violent or appears definitely insane when drunk. Sometimes he drinks on the way home from the hospital. Perhaps he has delirium tremens. Doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have him committed. Maybe you have already been obliged to put him away. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just this far gone, yet they got well. Well, you know, these examples, I think, you know, when I try to equate things to a way, it's a little hard, but, you know, the examples we have here and the ones we read yesterday show the different levels of the disease. In the case of the alcoholic, I think it's different stages of progression, you know. If someone is at level one and they keep going, they'll move to level two and so on and so on. I got a personal belief about something. This is just my theories about things. I think in a way, there is some progression, but I think we all, there's a lot of different levels of the disease in people. And again, this is my opinion. Feel free to disregard it. But, you know, with alcohol, it's a purely chemical addiction, and everybody pretty much gets bit the same. I know I'm in that program too. And, I'm actually taking drug and alcohol courses right now, and I can explain the neurochemical processes, but I won't bore you with it. But I think with food, it affects people differently. You know, I still think at the end of the day, it involves the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. But I do think people have it at varying levels of intensity. And that's why I think OA's approach to not trying to have a one-size-fits-all answer is the right one. You know, I hear people in meetings say, oh, I now eat all foods moderately. And I'm like, wow, wish I could do that. But, you know, I think about when I was in the middle of a long relapse cycle that I was in many years ago, there was a part of my disease whispering, look, if they can do it, you can do it. And the little part of me that was, you know, the immaturity of my disease going, well, if they get to eat this or that, I want to eat this or that. Well, you know, they can eat those foods moderately. You know, and I can't. You know, I was actually in another program for a while where they say, for those of us whose disease has reached a critical level, this is what we have found works for us. And I know with me, my disease is worse than some other people's. And I have foods that are red light foods for me, and they just can't be eaten safely, or I can't eat them like a gentleman. And there were other times in my recovery where I had to take even more stringent measures. You know, at one point, the only way I could stay abstinent was to weigh and measure my food very carefully and to write it down, call it in to a sponsor and commit it. I think the real key to recovery here is still the stuff we hear and how it works all the time, being willing to go to any lengths, to be able to try and break through that disease is screaming, oh no, you can do this, or this time you'll find out how to be like that person across the room in the OA meeting who can eat all foods moderately. And that's the hardest thing. And in very much, and I'll wrap up, as opposed to this levels of progression they talk about in these two wives thing, it's about the levels of the disease and being willing to go to any lengths and accept whatever I have to do to get better. And with that, I'll pass.
And thank you, John, for sharing on that. And I'll now just remind everybody where we are. We're on page 109, starting with 3. This husband has gone much further, and going through page 110, the second paragraph, yet they got well. And I will now take names of those of you who'd like to share.
Kristen R.
Kristen R.
Marilyn T.
Marilyn T.
Ann A.
Ann
Holly
A.
M.
Polly.
Yes.
Polly M. Okay.
Donna B.
Say that again.
Donna B.
Jana? Is it Jana or Dana?
Donna.
Oh, Donna. Sorry. My hearing's going. All right. Thank you, Donna.
Julie P.
Pick one more. All right. We'll stop there. We have Kristen R., Marilyn T., Ann A., Polly M., Donna B., and Julie P. And now we'll start with Kristen R., followed by Marilyn T.
Thank you, and thank you for your service. Good morning. This is Kristen R. in Virginia, a compulsive overeater. I've been every single one of these husbands. And sometimes I still am, but I didn't see it for a long time. And I didn't see how my compulsive eating affected other people. I was doing insane things and putting, you know, people I love at risk. One time I went into a bakery to get my binge foods, and I left my 1.5-year-old, my 4-year-old in the car. And recently in my town, a woman had been arrested for leaving her kids in the car. The air conditioning was on. It wasn't a hot day. I could see them from where I was standing. But I walked in the bakery, and there were 2 police officers standing there. And so given what had just happened to the other woman, a rational person would have turned around and walked out, gotten back in the car and said, what am I, nuts? How could I possibly do that? I didn't. I stood there and I waited for my food, and I just prayed that they wouldn't notice and then I would get out there quick enough. And now I can see how insane that is. But I've also done crazier things, you know, thrown furniture, screamed at small children who had no idea why I was screaming. You know, the list of my insanity goes on and on. And so today, my mental health is dependent on a lot of things. But the primary thing, the bedrock of my mental health, is my spiritual fitness. And as long as I'm in spiritually fit condition, then I can continue to cooperate with God and do the things I need to do to be useful and loving to the people around me. And so you know, that doesn't mean that I was magically zapped. On the contrary, what it means is that every morning when I wake up, I have to begin the day by praying before my mind takes over and tries to tell me that I'm a piece of shit and I'm worthless and I shouldn't bother. And then I have to get up and I have to do other things to take care of my health. And all this is so I don't end up back in the food and back like one of these husbands, particularly husband number four. And that I'm not acting like, you know, someone that I used to think I would only see on TV. And it took a long time for me to see it in myself. But thank God for this program, because that last sentence, we can get well. This program got me well. I can see things now about myself and I can ask God to have them removed. And then I can do the footwork. I can practice the steps to stay well. And on days when I really struggle, and I still struggle, even in a recovered state, I still struggle and I still act out, I can quickly make amends and I can do repair. And repair wasn't something I never did before. I never said I was sorry. I never recognized. Thank you. With that, I'll wrap up. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Kristen R. Marilyn T., followed by Ann A.
Hi, this is Marilyn T. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Again, this is Marilyn T. from Northern California, a grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. What struck me this time in reading number 3 and 4 was just how far gone I got. I remember, and I don't know why it just struck me now, because it's something I lived with for a long time, but the last binge was probably the worst. I mean, that I could actually get into the program. I got into a food program, which was OA, and in 2 years lost 160 pounds and then started, just the mind took over. I, you know, was doing the physical part of weighing and measuring, and this slow slip down the slippery slope that sent me into gaining all of the weight back within several, maybe, you know, twice as long as it took me to lose it. But, you know, it's just, for me, it's always been quantity. It's been never enough, never, never, ever enough. And, but, you know, the key components, and this is kind of where I go, because yes, it was alarming. It was horrible. It was all of that. But what was finding the key to this for me, which is the recovery, is that I had never been told about the alcoholic binge foods, the alcoholic binge ingredients, and the alcoholic behavior. That is what I had to do to put it down. It sounds so simple in hindsight. It's just like an alcoholic. You put the plug in the jug and you don't pick it up. And for that, I have entire abstinence over my food problems, based on a daily spiritual program. I've even, you know, just since doing another retreat this Saturday, was I have to get up earlier because I have to start my spiritual program before I do anything else. I cannot piece it into my life. I have to put it first, and start sponsoring right away after I finish the 12 steps. But I hope I've explained it. I hope I can pass something on to the first timers that there really is a solution here in this meeting, in doing the 12 steps by the big book, in getting a sponsor, in working it rapidly and like your hair's on fire. And this kind of peace and serenity is definitely worth holding on to, not having to white knuckle things. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Marilyn T. Ann A., followed by Polly M. Ann.
Hello, am I heard?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely, the progression of the disease and the severity of the severity that it can go to is definitely resonating with me from the reading. The last sentence, but we can get well, you know, that's the thing, is we can get well. And, you know, in my recovery, you know, I first came in the rooms in 2001, and it's been a journey. And has it been perfect? Nope, it sure hasn't. And I've struggled with my, you know, periods of relapse. However, when I look back on the number of years it's been, it has definitely been a progression forward. And even though there's, you know, a couple steps back, two steps forward, and so on and so forth, kind of that dance. But overall, I'm definitely have experienced the growth of work, you know, as a result of working the steps and, you know, maturing, which I didn't have any chance of emotionally maturing, you know, as long as I was in the food prior to coming to the room. So, you know, and there have been periods where it's like, gosh, my recovery doesn't look like what I want it to look like today. But if I just keep plodding away and keep coming back and keep my head in the steps and develop my spiritual life, that is the key. And for and being open to what that's supposed to look like, because for a long time I think I kind of thought, oh, it needs to look like going to church or doing, you know, whatever the religious folks are doing. But for me, I've realized in the last few years that spiritual development is really right now developing a more personal relationship with the God of my understanding, an intimate personal relationship in terms of, you know, taking the pause to throughout the day or practicing a spiritual practice in the morning, intentionally connecting, you know, step 11. And, you know, the steps are definitely a guide for living and for getting out of the disease and into a living situation, not a dying while you're walking situation. So today I'm, you know, I like that I can be gentle on myself if it's not a perfect day in terms of recovery or food or what all I should be doing, and more about not shaming the hell out of myself, and which is also helping me. So I'm not being as judgmental with myself. I'm not judgmental with others. So, which is a character defect of mine, and also doing away with the perfectionism, and that's chipping away at that, because that's a long entrenched pattern that's really just not productive. So anyway, with that, thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Ann A. Polly M. followed by Donna B. Polly.
Yeah, hi. This is Holly M. from
Holly.
Western New York. Yeah.
Hi, sorry.
That's all right.
Okay.
So I'm so grateful to be on the call this morning. I, you know, was on yesterday morning, and I'm new to A Vision for You, but not new to recovery around addiction and compulsive overeating. And when the reading this morning, I was 23 years old when I came into 12 steps, and it's been 29 years. Can somebody mute their phone? There's a paper.
Yeah, someone's unmuted. Could you please mute your phones if you are unmuted? Thank you.
So, you know, I've been recovering from alcohol and drugs for 29 years, and I was, you know, I was at enough of a bottom when I was 23 to qualify and find recovery in 12-step. You know, but now 29 years later, actually I got up to 295 pounds. I got back into a right-sized body through 12-step recovery, through a food-based 12-step. And my disease with food addiction, with compulsive overeating, took me to places that it never did with alcohol. So I really relate to the stage 3 and 4. You know, I have a wonderful relationship with my one son, and when he saw me pick up the food again after a period of about 18 months of abstinence, he was really concerned. And we were out together, and I adore this kid, and I just could not wait until he went his way and I went mine so I could go back into the food that I just convinced him, don't worry, it's not a problem. And I spent a year every single day going, today's going to be different. I'm going to be abstinent. I'm going to do everything that I'm supposed to do like a good girl. And I couldn't put a day together. So this time around, you know, I've lost the weight that I need to lose, but the behaviors, I'm just so grateful to have found this program. I'm so, this particular call yesterday, I'm so grateful to all the people who reached out to me last night and yesterday and this morning, and I need it. And I'm just, you know, if it were just a problem with food, then we would stop eating food and everything would be fine. But I am, you know, I have a seemingly hopeless state of body and mind that if I am not, you know, I understand driving home from the hospital because of, you know, I mean, I have been in, I've been in emergency situations because of, you know, compulsive overeating or food addiction, and have thought of nothing more when I've come to out of emergency surgery than, you know, oh, you know, I wonder if because now I'm in the hospital I'll be able to eat something that's not on plan, if that's okay. You know what I mean? Like the craziness, the insanity. And the other thing that I'd like to say is I have this, I've been married for a long time to a beautiful, kind, intelligent man who's type 2, uncontrolled, over 100 pounds overweight, and because he's been sober for 29 years as well, I want to just have a conversation with him, and nobody could ever have that conversation with me. So I, when listening to this, I see it from both sides. Like, I so desperately want to get him to join me, you know, on this road. And, you
Holly,
know,
it's time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for your share and welcome to our line. Donna B followed by Julie P. Donna, press star 1 to unmute.
This is Donna B. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. I'm calling from Denver, Colorado, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. When I came into the room, somebody once said to me that some of us are sicker than others. And I thought the determination of how sick a person was based on how much weight they needed to lose. That there was a linear relationship between sickness and weight. And I was totally and completely incorrect. That was yet another belief, another delusion that had to be entirely smashed. I can now identify that, in fact, I am one of the people in which the disease has progressed. And sadly, that I am one of the people who are sicker than others, which I feel a little bit uncomfortable saying, because one of the things I'm asking is that God should relieve me of the obsession of comparing myself to others. But for me, the way that I know that I'm closer to number 4 is that the way that the disease manifests in me in a more intense way is that it's the degree of self-loathing. It's the degree to which I believe lies about myself. It's the degree to which I grew up with these lies, and the degree to which these tapes sound absolutely and entirely true. And my brain gets hijacked. No matter how long I've been in the program, my brain continues to be hijacked. Yesterday, I was in a tailspin with body image issues. I wish that I were in a state of entire neutrality and that neutrality was evidence of my recovery. But given that I'm so far along in this disease, I'm not sure what neutrality will look like to me. For today, it means knowing that my brain has been hijacked. It means knowing that there are lies circulating in my mind. the biggest problem with the lies is that they lead to that buildup of human emotion. And in my disease, my brain doesn't say to me, eat this thing or that thing because it might be different this time. In my disease, what happens is self-loathing creates a massive hole in my body. My body is literally hijacked by an emptiness for which the only solution appears to be volume eating. And it doesn't matter what the food is. It's discussing the emptiness as intensely and as quickly as I can so that I can be free of that intense self-loathing and free of those lies that take bondage of my mind. So for today, it is a part of my recovery in the morning to ask God to divorce my thinking of self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. It is a part of my recovery to even acknowledge that I am in a state of agitation and that to pause is the best thing that I can possibly do. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Donna B. And before Julie P., I just want to remind anyone who just came on the line or who came on late, we're on page 109, starting with the word three. This husband has gone much further and reading through two paragraphs ending with, yet they got well. And after Julie P., I will open up the lines to take more people to comment. Julie P.
Hi, this is Julie P. from Southern California. And I just felt like I'm definitely all of those at times. I'm still in the food. The honesty, and we've been talking about all week about affecting. My family has no idea what's going on, and they're like, "Are you on sugar today? Or are you off sugar today?" You know, and my friends just look at me like, "Oh, Julie's doing it again." You know, that whole number four, as far as just again and again each day. You know, somebody already shared on the line. Each day, I'm gonna do it this time. I'm gonna do it. You know, and I hear myself say that, and I know that I can't do it, and it's just, I need to call people, I need to reach out, you know, all these things, I know what I'm supposed to do, but do I do it? No. So, and then I start saying, well, maybe I'm not ready, okay, that's okay, maybe I'm not ready. And that just gives my disease the permission to keep going on. You know, the obsession of the mind and body is just insane. But I am one of you. I know I am. And you guys definitely have something I want. So I'm just going to keep coming back. And I know I need to reach out to other people and get on the website. So I'm just going to do that today. I'm going to call somebody. One of you guys, I'm going to call you. So I'm just saying that out loud. So I do that. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Julia P. I anticipate your call. And I will now open the lines up for more people who'd like to share.
Melanie C.
Julie E.B.
Well, I meant Melanie
Stephanie
C.
N.
Who was after Melanie?
Julie E.B.
Julie.
Chrissy Jane.
No, say that again.
Chrissy Jane.
Chrissy?
Chrissy Jane.
Okay.
Jana M.
Say that again.
Jana M.
Stephanie N.
Jana M. And Stephanie?
Greg B.
Greg B. Okay, we'll stop there. Stephanie, what was your last initial? I'll catch you when you're on. All right. I have Melanie C., Julie E.B., I think it's Chrissy Jane, Jana M., Stephanie, and Greg B. Melanie.
Hey, good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, you betcha. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Oregon. It's very emotional to see the progression of the disease in black and white here. We talked about cat one, cat two. I'm thinking in terms of weather, you know, and it hit me like that. It just hit me like that. I have recollections of cat one around age two, and seven would be cat two. And then here I am at age 50 when I was able to get entirely abstinent and in the place where I was at cat three. And only from that miracle was able to not go into category four. There was a situation that I found myself in that was not very pretty after I was even sober in these rooms and realized that the depth of this particular disease and the hold that it had upon me. And it was looking awful near to the possibility of hospitalization, i.e. through the means of a sanitarium. This disease is relentless, and it didn't let go of me at one time or another. The thing that is so scary is that it lulled me to sleep at such a young age that I couldn't attend and couldn't see what was happening to me, and that I was so invested in it being something, but it was the other for all these years. And I worked very, very hard for it to be that something that I gave my life up over for it. Everything that I pursued narrowed down to the end in this fall of 2005 of complete alienation from the world. There was a diagnosable illness for me called agoraphobia. And that was absolutely crippling. My life was done. It was over at that particular point. That's what this disease lulled me into a sleep doing. I was in a complete brownout. That's when I learned and understood that all the wreckage of my family, that all the things that I've been doing, the pain, the suffering, all the sadness, the darkness that was within my home came from the disease in which I was practicing and projecting and dumping upon them, that would be a lifelong journey of being able to have the opportunity of a real second chance to be able to amend that sort of thing with them. And the other piece was that this food does something different for me than booze did for me, and that it was the constant brownout of not being able to process reality or have any sense of reason to any ability on anything that I did anywhere. I wasn't one of those stories that talked about she had it all together and everything was evidence about wonderful, 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 except in this area where it came with food. No, it was a 100%. I am an alcoholic, i.e. compulsive overeater, 100%. With a disease of alcoholism, compulsive overeating, 100% of the time, which consumes my entire brain, and everything was lent over to that particular thing. And doggone it, if it wasn't happening to me in a brownout. I did not know. So the mercy and grace of whatever power that's in this big book that came to me brought me the directions. Oh, thank you so much to be able to get up out of this deal. Join me. Thanks, Mo.
Hey, thanks for your share, Melanie. Julie E.B., followed by Chrissy Jane.
Hi, this is Julie E.B. Can you hear me?
I can, Julie.
All right. Thanks, Mo, and thanks to everyone on the line for your service today and for this daily meeting. What a blessing. I'm Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And I really can identify in with the person who's gone much further, as it says, because I did have friendships slip away as I was isolated in the food and hiding in the food. My family was definitely a near wreck, and I'm blessed that they're together today, but they, as well as I, are still cleaning up some of the mess I made. I could not hold my position. I would stay up all night in resentment and fear and swing into harm and not have any idea the causes and conditions of why my life seemed to be so difficult. The doctor had been called upon. I had six specialists, several hospitalizations. I was bedbound for 4 months. I was screaming in pain. But I also want to share, and I did not know why, I can identify with the fourth as well in terms of rage, in terms of withdrawal. But I will say this, there is hope. There is a solution. It's a great chapter in a little book that we call the Big Book, and one thing at a time, putting down the food with the help and support both my home group and then a vision sponsor in these vision meetings, kind of reprogramming my brain, listening to special editions. And, you know, I listen to two or three meetings, a vision a day at least, and go to my other meetings as well. How do I have so much time, you ask? Because now there is hope. Now I have friendships that are strengthening and encouraging. My home is coming back together, and it's beautiful to see how my family thrives when I try to let go of criticizing and arguing. When I'm not living in fear of the future, resentment of the past, and harms I can barely notice myself making, but rather find 10, 11, and 12, the exact nature of my wrong, and clean up my side of the street in the morning, at night, and in the middle of the day, pausing. I don't have any specialists. I see the doctor once a year for an annual. I'm able to move my body. I've released that 135 pounds that I was carrying around and have been miracle of all miracles, the same maintenance weight, no up, no down, no roller coaster, which is hard for me as a compulsive over and under eater. So this is hopeful, and I pray for families out there suffering. I pray for people out there suffering. Many maybe were just as far gone and got well, and I thank God that I have the gift today of being well and the choice to live as a person who's useful and of service. Thank you so much for letting me share. Have a blessed day. Bye.
Thank you, Julie. Mm-hmm. Chrissy Jane, followed by Jana M., if I have those names right.
This is Chrissy Jane, compulsive overeater. I just wanted to share that as long as I was looking at the food, I was in the disease. It's when I saw that it was my thinking, that the disease was in my between my ears, and it was through I needed a power greater than me to change my thinking. And the steps gave me the power, first the power the power greater than myself to change my thinking. And to see it's my thinking. It says in the Big Book, it doesn't ask you to change much. It asks you to change everything. My thinking was inside out. And I had to change my thinking completely around. Instead of thinking of bothering my sponsor, I was doing her a favor by calling her. That was my first thought that I had to turn around. And with that, I pass.
Oh, thank you, Chrissy Jane. Jana M., followed by Stephanie.
Hi, this is Jana M. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can. Jana, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. So this is Jana M., gratefully recovered in Phoenix, Arizona. Really happy to be here on the line. Thank you, Mo and Team Tuesday, for your service. I identify in a lot with these different types. I've been each one of them in one way or another at various points. I've had back-to-back abstinence now for 6 months. And before I got abstinent after a grueling 4-year relapse, I had come to a point of being suicidally depressed. I was having panic attacks at least once a day, usually 3 or 4, full-on violent shaking, hyperventilating panic attacks. My husband was begging me to go to a doctor, a psychiatrist, something because my head wasn't right. I was freaking out over too many dishes in the sink or just anything not going according to my script. I couldn't handle anything. And something, my higher power I know now, came into my head and said, get your butt back to a meeting. And so I went to a meeting and I walked into a men's only meeting and they were gracious enough to let me stay there. And I sat in that meeting and didn't say a word. And I came back the next day and the next. And all I knew was to keep coming back. All I knew was that there were people in the rooms that had something that I wanted and I didn't know how I was going to get it. I just knew that I wasn't going to give it to myself. I wasn't going to find it because I had exhausted every single way that I could think of to get this thing under control, to, you know, lose the weight, all of this. I was always focused on weight. And what I realized, you know, being in program this time is that it's not about losing the weight. It's about losing the hate. I don't struggle with weight. I struggle with self-hatred. I struggle with self-loathing. I struggle with all of these things that make me think, what's the point? You know, why should I try? Let me just go ahead and eat because that feels good, even if it's only for about 10 seconds before the horror show of what have I done kicks in. Right after coming back into the meetings, I received very clear direction on what abstinence and a plan of eating would look like for me. I had gotten up to 312 pounds. At my highest weight. And over the last 6 months, I've been able to release my first 30 pounds of that. By the way, I got up to this weight as a vegan. So it didn't matter. I could binge on salad. It was just the insanity. Is that my time?
Yes, it is, Jana.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you so much. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you for your share. Stephanie and Greg, we have about 4 minutes left. Can you each take 2 minutes? Stephanie?
Yes, I can do that.
All right.
This is Stephanie in recovered in Kansas. Thanks. Thank you for your service, Mo. And a lot of it resonated with me, but the part that really jumped out was on page 110 where it says, he admits he cannot drink like other people, but he does not see why. He clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so. And I desperately wanted to be normal in my husband's eyes. And, you know, I tried every which way and he was always so supportive of everything. And I didn't realize it was my codependency that I just needed him to think I was normal. And if I wasn't with him, I needed my friends to think I was normal or my parents or whoever I was with. It really didn't matter. But I was with him the majority of the time. And so, you know, and, you know, we're focusing on the wives. So anyways, but I, when I came into program and I started to get better, he wanted me to, you know, be able to eat what he was eating if we would go out and things like that. And I really struggled with the codependency and that he didn't understand why I couldn't do that. And I learned that he doesn't have to understand, only I have to understand. And I've been recovered long enough that he now he's beginning to see that I can't do that, or maybe he's just stopped asking, but it's gotten a lot easier. But another thing that's helped is my nightly inventory, looking at my self-seeking and where am I putting the power. You know, I can only have one higher power. If I try to make other people my higher power wanting to be normal in their eyes, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. So I have to just continue to seek only my higher power and realize that I will never be a normal eater. And that's okay. Because I've learned a way to eat that doesn't make me crave for more, and I'm really grateful for that. So, anyways, I will pass. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Stephanie, and for keeping it short. And Greg B., you'll be our final share.
Hey, thank you. This is Greg B. Can you hear me?
And Greg.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Sorry, headset. Greg B., recovered alcoholic compulsive eater in California. Yeah, it doesn't really matter if I was type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4. I can assure you I've been all four types, sometimes at the same time. What matters is I'm a pickle. I'm never going to be a cucumber again. I can hope and wish I was a normal eater. I wish I could just, you know, work out my weight away. That stopped working when I was about 30. You know, I'm a volume eater. I'm a big guy. You know, but I'm not as big as I used to be. And I keep working and working more towards recovery and less towards the illness, malady, disease, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, I can just analyze this stuff to death. The bottom line is, what am I going to do about it? I'm going to work with somebody. I'm going to help other people. I'm going to work with my sponsor. I'm going to take direction and advice from people in whom the problem has been solved, even if I don't want to. Wanting to is optional. I know, you know, I don't like applying for jobs all the time in my current situation. I don't like rejection. But, you know, the beautiful thing is that doesn't happen in the program. Like my friend says, you can't get this thing wrong. Just do it. Do stuff. Work with others. Go to meetings. Go to face-to-face meetings. Get accountable. You know, I don't want to just, like, hide out in a dark room on the phone. I need to get out in the world and work with my family, you know, and not impose my program on them. I'm good at that. Hey, look what you did. That's very convenient for me. But bottom line is, I got stuff to do. I got work to do. It doesn't end, but it's happy work. I like being abstinent. I don't crave other foods. I crave recovery. So with that, I will keep coming in, dialing in, and showing up, Greg B., and I will not leave my number like I did the other day. Thanks, everybody. Pass.
Greg B., perfect timing. And with that, we will close our meeting. I want to thank all those who shared today and for the people giving service, Kelly F., Carol H., John K., Terry H., and Sherry K. B. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Terry H. to read A Vision for You.
Hi, everyone. My name is Terry H., recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina, getting ready for Hurricane Florence.
Uh-oh.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.